Hey guys, as my 8th season of Interviews with the Haunting Masters comes to a close, I want to thank you all for the support that you've given me, and I want to wish you a happy holidays. Keep those reviews coming, those comments coming, helps me keep the podcast free. And the last few episodes of the season, it's dedicated to all the late season archery hunts, all those guys still out there grinding it out through the end of the year and into January. So we're going to be talking a lot about mule deer, coos deer, Arizona, New Mexico, some of the other states that have some of these late season hunts, and hope you enjoy it. We're going to jump into this next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Deck Sneak Boot. This week, we're kind of doing something different. We're going to be dedicating the whole week to archery deer. So we're calling it Deer Week. And it's kind of like in celebration of the opener of archery deer season here in Arizona. So we're going to talk a lot of coos deer, some mule deer. And today we got a local guy on that's he's young, but he's been in a big hunting family, and he seems to get it done. He's got a lot of drive, he's taking bucks, and I kind of like to get that younger guy's perspective on things, you know, looking at it from a different angle and approaching it different ways. So today we're gonna be talking to Eric Farce. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm good. I'm in the middle of a remodel in my house, so it's kind of a little hectic. I'm pretty sure you can see the disaster zone behind me there. So my office is in shambles. My house is upside down, and it's I'm over it at this point. It's been a couple of weeks, like 4 weeks already, and I'm just ready for it to be done so I can get my life back in order over here. So,
imagine.
Why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself and what you do and a little bit about your background and how you got started in hunting?
So I grew up in a hunting family. My dad had grown up rifle hunting and started archery hunting and kind of took it by the lead ropes, and he learned pretty much everything on his own, and he taught me. I rifle hunted until I was 13. I saw my brother and him having fun out with bows, so I was like, hey, I want to go join, and shot my first javelina and first archery mule deer when I was 13, and from then I was hooked. So I dove into it head first, and I tried to spend as much time and I tried to fill every tag I could, and then PSC PSC picked me up as a sponsor, so that was pretty cool, and it made me want to shoot even more. I've just been hunting since I was 13. I've always been after just big bucks and just wanting to fill every tag I can. It's just been fun.
Nice. Yeah, it's addicting once you get that. Not everybody gets it, but once you get that first animal with your with your bow, it's kind of hard to go back to the rifle sometimes. Like I just recently.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah.
Yeah, I just recently started enjoying rifle hunting again, you know, in the last like 3-4 years. The only hunt that I enjoyed actually doing rifle hunting was coos deer hunting. Everything else kind of seemed, you know, because it was still a challenge, you know, it's still.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm starting to get.
Yeah. So what are you doing now? You're in school or you work at the university?
So I'm a full-time student. I'm taking. Okay. 18 credit units this semester, and then working full time. So it's pretty busy. I always have to either go hiking at 2 o'clock in the morning or go hiking after dark, to go scout and check cameras. So it's always a pain in the butt to get time, but you got to make the time to go out and mm-hmm. find these big deer.
Oh yeah, for sure. So you kind of led me into some of my questions. Finding big deer. What are some of the types of habitat that you're looking for, for those bigger bucks during the archery season? What are you looking for specifically when you're doing your scouting?
I'm typically I'm looking everywhere because you never know where there can be a, you know, $120, $130. They could be anywhere in any unit. I tend to like the thick Ocotillo stuff because I know that a lot of bucks like to hang out in that stuff. Or I'll go up super high up into the pine trees and find bucks up in there. I either go really low or really high. That's typically where I find, you know, the most deer and the most more mature deer that don't get hit by the rifle hunts as hard. Mm-hmm. Usually that middle zone, that oak zone that has a lot of roads going through it, that usually gets hit up a lot by rifle hunters, and it's hard to find a good buck in those types of areas.
Yeah. Do you find when you're hunting in the thick Ocotillo stuff, it's kind of harder to get a shot off or to get into position to make a shot though?
Yeah, it is. It can work both ways. It's nice cover, but there's times where I've been in and had like a 115-inch buck standing right there at like 30 or 50 yards, and it's broadside, completely open. I can't get a shot. In those cases, you got to be pretty patient and wait for that opportunity. But yeah, it could kind of shoot yourself on the foot hunting and that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I've experienced that myself a few times. And patience is not something that it's not one of my virtues for sure. I don't know how I got into hunting, since hunting is definitely a patience game, but I don't have a lot of it. So,
yeah, I've also shot a lot of Ocotillos too.
Yeah, it happens. I shot a buck, and I shot him through an Ocotillo, kind of deflected my arrow a little bit. I still got him, and I still harvested him. But the way I hit him, it kind of hit him in a way, however the arrow impacted, it made him do a backflip. Like he
Back
and flipped back on himself, and he tumbled down the hill, broke his skull. His eyeball popped out. His eyeball popped out. It was like, it was the most brutal, harvest I ever had. You know, it was like, it was, oh, crazy. My God, I can't believe that just happened right now. But yeah, it was pretty nuts. Like, that was my biggest coos buck with a bow. And it was a fun hunt. I was solo, and it's going back a few years ago now. But I like hunting the Ocotillo as well. But I've always had that issue where I'm not super sneaky. Yeah. And I've always get into a spot where I'm like, okay, I can see him fine, but I can't shoot. And then, it blows up on me eventually because they eventually figure me out because I can't sit there long enough to wait for that little window. So,
yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about coos deer behavior. If you can, think about their behavioral characteristics, something that you can count on that they do during the rut that would give you an advantage, or, that you could tell the listeners that would give them an advantage to scoring a buck during the rut. Other than the obvious biggest, chasing does,
I mean, I was going to say the biggest thing is they're going to be on does. So, if you go into an area that's got a lot of does, you're likely to find some bucks. Another big thing around that time period is that it's really dry. It's typically really dry in the winter, and those does will hit water a lot. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they'll bring those bucks with them if the bucks don't come in on their own. But you can count on them being a lot more active around that time if they are chasing does. If they're not, like around December, you don't have in some units, you won't have as much rutting activity the first part of the season of December. And if it's really cold, those deer will be bedded down pretty late into the morning until it starts to warm up. Then they'll get up, and you can kind of count on them being on those hillsides where the sun's going to be there first, those eastern facing hillsides. But for the most part, if they're not chasing those, they'll be hunkered down. But you'll see more big bucks around that time period. It'd be harder to find those bucks in October than in the rut in December for the archery hunt.
Well, in October, it's the opposite. They're looking for shade. It's still hot as balls out there. And, if you catch them in the open, it's only for a few minutes early, first thing in the morning before the sun really hits. hits them. And yeah, so it's exactly, I agree with you. You know, it's one of the things there, once the cold weather hits here, those deer seek warmth from the sun. I mean, they're desert animals. They're used to living in 110 degrees all year round. So yeah, the month and a half out of the year when we get, you know, 30s and 40 degree weather or whatever, sometimes 20s. I've actually been down south a few times. I remember one morning, I was just having this conversation with somebody last night. It was 9 degrees and it warmed up to almost 70 degrees that afternoon. So it was like this giant swing of, you know, so it's, yeah. Arizona is real crazy for that, especially when you're in that transitional elevation, like the 3,000 feet-ish areas, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You get those giant swings. So what other characteristics do you find kind of can aid you into, or behavioral stuff that could aid you into locating or harvesting a buck?
Yeah, but the biggest thing with this later hunt is you can kind of, since the temperatures, like I said, are a lot lower, you can count on looking more to those, onto those faces that get more sun. Then say in the earlier seasons, you're going to be, a lot of time you'll be glassing to the west in the evenings on the sides that are shaded. You can kind of reverse that a little bit in the winter, and you'll be able to see more deer because you're glassing hillsides that aren't as thick. They'll be up on their feet a lot more towards this upcoming season. A lot of feeding right before the rut, so you can kind of catch them out feeding a little bit more. And they'll be cruising a lot too around December. Even if they're not chasing does, they'll be moving quite a bit, looking for does. I've seen bucks on, I've watched on one end of the mountain range all summer long, and then see them, you know, in December, end of November, December, on the other side of the mountain range, just cruising around. So if you watch a buck in the early season and you can't find him in December, he could have moved on, and you're going to have to look elsewhere.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned, you know, the cruising, and that kind of leads me to something that I found is really effective for me, is that when those bucks are quote unquote cruising, they typically are quartering into the wind, and they're just keep cutting the wind, quartering it to see if they can catch scent of a doe that's coming in. And they're typically walking in a pretty straight line when they're doing that. They're not, it's not erratic.
Yeah.
And I've always been successful, especially if you got a buddy who can stay on back on a radio or something that could talk you into getting ahead of his path and getting a shot coming across you. Matter of fact, that's how it was actually on a mule deer, but the last deer I killed was same scenario. So the mule deer do same thing. But bucks will definitely, if you think about, they're not going to walk directly into the wind, because directly into the wind just gives them that same scent cone. They quarter the wind, so they keep continually getting a very wide, scent tract, which is, you know, that's their tactic for locating bucks, or excuse me, does rather. And if you can play the wind right and you can move fast enough to cut him off to where he's going, you have a really good opportunity to get in a buck that way.
Yeah, so, if you're in the mountains looking for bucks and they're cruising like that, you might have a chance of bedding them down. But just like you said, if you're looking out into some lower country and those deer are cruising, you got to have a buddy on the radio to walk you in. Otherwise, that buck will just keep walking and walking and walking. And if you're by yourself and you try to go get on them, good luck on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the only way I ever see that working when you're by yourself is you can tell if he's on a certain path, if he's going to let's say like a saddle or something, and you got the angle on him and you can get there fast enough. But
yeah,
it's a crapshoot a lot. Yeah, but definitely works out when you have somebody talking you in. So
another thing with that, also too, that I wanted to mention is, also, you talk about like watching deer. A lot of times in this hunt, I've watched small bucks cruise like that, and they've always, most of the time, they'll lead me to a hot doe, and there'll be a bigger buck with her. That's another tactic that I kind of use when I'm out glassing.
Oh yeah, that's key. That's a good point. Yeah, I've noticed that myself many, many times where, you know, they're all, you know, not all the does come in at the same time. So if there's a specific area where there's maybe one or two does, if those one or two does, you watch those does, you're going to see bucks filtering through, you know? And no, that's a good point. Let's switch gears to not finding them, but actually killing them. When you're stalking a coos deer, give me three rules to live by.
So my first rule, and it's, I feel like it's, I've learned this more over the years. I used to be pretty anxious when I first started getting into archery, and I would watch a buck and bed him down. And I would think, oh, it's game time. Go after him. And, when I started hunting by myself a lot, I started to have less success because I was bedding these bucks down and going down there and the buck wasn't in the same bed. Mm-hmm. So I've learned to kind of be a little bit more patient and wait, especially on these early hunts. And then if you're in a spot where the buck's not going to be in shade all day when he first beds down, they'll get up and they'll have a second bed. Mm-hmm. Especially like around 10 to 2, they'll get up and change beds because at that time the sun angles change and they might be getting straight sun on them. So I'll wait down to that buck beds a second time, unless it looks like he's solid right there. That's one thing I always keep in mind. The second thing that we talked about is to always be patient. I struggle with that a lot sometimes too, especially when it's a big buck and I get all giddy. Being patient and just slowing down and making sure that I'm not going too fast and being too loud. I always think if I try to listen to the birds chirp, it sounds kind of stupid, but if I can't hear the birds and everything else, like the wind and the grass and everything else, that means I'm being too loud and I need to slow down.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah. A third tip is, that I learned from my dad is
he just taught me something. I like that. Remember that.
Yeah. It's one thing I always try to keep in mind because you get going and you're so focused on getting within distance of that buck, you kind of lose track of like how loud you're kind of in your own head and you lose track of how loud your feet are on the grass. The third tip is, I learned this one from my dad, is once you get to about 50 yards of a buck, don't push it unless you have to or you can't. Like it looks like, say you got a ledge and you could definitely get to 20 yards. If I get to that 50 yard zone, I'm not going to push it because I'm confident in shooting 50 yards. And I don't want to, especially on these big bucks, I don't want to push it. And it's like they got a sixth sense almost when you get that close. You could just be standing there and boom, buck gets up. Wind's fine, everything. So I try to not push that 50 yard gap if I can. I'll just sit tight and wait for him to stand up unless I can shoot him in his bed.
I'm with you. I don't even, honestly, if I'm in bow range, I don't even try to get any closer. Like, that's just me. It's because I know I'm more confident in my shooting than I am in my stalking. You know, I know.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's more that can go wrong at 70, 80 yards, but, you know, and he has more time to duck the arrow. But I feel a lot of times, actually, when you're at further distances, the sound of the bow going off doesn't really make them flinch.
I agree with you completely.
You know, and if your arrow setup's not super loud, you know, cloving through the air, 9 times out of 10, they're going to stand there and react, you know, at the last second when the arrow's already there. So, I'm with you on that. I'm like, you get to a spot where you know you can make a shot, let him make the mistake. Don't make the mistake, you know? Go ahead. You say, I was going to tell you a story exactly. I did the exact opposite last year. I had a, and it was because it would have been my biggest archery buck. Actually, it would have been my biggest coos buck, period.
Oh, really?
I mean, I was right there. I had him at 36 yards and I had a branch covering his whole body. So I started scooting myself to the right instead of just waiting for him to, you know, feed out to where I needed him to, and then I blew it. So
I've been there before.
I mean, there was no reason for me to get closer or to make it, you know, try to forced a shot, and I did, and it bit me in the ass. And now I got that deer bounding away, bone in my skull right now, and it's driving me nuts. So I'm out for redemption this January.
So. Yeah, another tip, I just thought about it when you were talking about that, is if you are, regardless if you're hunting with a guy or hunting solo, especially if you're hunting solo, to have range finding binoculars or to have a combo of some like 10x42s mm-hmm. in a rangefinder, that's like key for getting in on these deer, because the stuff we hunt in, it's super thick. So it's hard enough to get that close to begin with, but when you don't know exactly where that buck's at, because everything looks different from when you're glassing to when you're on the ground, you need the glass just brush right in front of you. And people think it might be dumb to glass things that close, but when you're looking for just an ear, a tip of an ear, you need the binos to be looking for those deer, because they could be holed up right by a sage bush.
Oh yeah,
they're a small deer and they can hide pretty dang good.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I never used to carry binos with me because I hated having that heavy thing around my neck. It always makes me tired faster, way faster. So I always just kept my rangefinder on a bino harness in front of me, and I would use that. You know, it's still kind of use it in glass. You know, it's pretty decent glass, and they're seven power. But I started using the 8x32 CLs from Swarovski. They're super small, super light, and the glass is amazing because it's a Swaro. And it's just enough power to hand, you know, that when you're hand holding it, you're not giving yourself, you know, a freaking migraine. And and they're not heavy, and they're super small, and they're easy to get in and out of the, you know, out of the bino harness and all that stuff. And I found that with my other rangefinder. I just did a review actually on rangefinder binoculars on my blog. If you guys want to check that out, the Laser Force Nikons bang for the buck were amazing system to use, and I might actually switch over. I don't know. I've gotten really accustomed to those little binos, and I really like them. But I might switch over to that because they're pretty compact. And I see, it's on the cusp of being a little too heavy up front for me. But they are the lightest that I tested, and they are the smallest, and they have great glass, and the rangefinder's fast, super fast. Really? Yeah, like some of the other stuff that I tried. Yeah, like the Vortex aren't very fast at all.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah. Neither is their regular range finder. You got to push it three times. That annoys the shit out of me. But anyway, that's a different topic for a different day. Do you have any like tricks or anything that you'd like to share? Like anything that you do that's kind of like a little, you know, out of the ordinary that might help somebody or give somebody another tool in their toolbox to get one on the ground?
It's more of like a personal trick that I think is the biggest part of, growing and being more successful as a hunter. It's always, evaluating and reevaluating the way I'm hunting and where I'm hunting. I mean, I'll listen to podcasts like every week, hunting podcasts that give me a different perspective on how to hunt. And this year it made me realize that I was spending a lot of time in areas that I wasn't going to have as good of success just because the land itself was a harder spot to hunt and there wasn't as many deer, mm-hmm. but I was in there throwing cameras out because I seen a big buck in there.
Right. But
overall, my success in there would be pretty low. So I've pulled out of those areas and focused more on areas where I could have success that are, you know, nice areas with a lot of cuts that are easy to stalk in, those types of areas. And then reevaluating how I'm shooting my bow, just all around, just constantly reevaluating myself and trying to be a better hunter. That's one trick.
No, that's smart, man. I think that's a characteristic of the guys who are consistently successful is having that awareness. So that's good.
another trick. Another trick is once you find those areas and you, like, say you see a big buck and you've glassed them up and everything, and I'll walk the piss out of the whole area, at least 4 or 5 times till I'm sure I know, like, where all the major trails are, where the bedding areas are, where it seems like they're frequenting the most. Like, if you find a lot of deer droppings in one area, they're obviously feeding around in there. Mm-hmm. Learning areas from the ground is key to, once you get come to the hunt, you don't want to be cruising through all the stuff that the deer are hanging out in. You kind of want to stay back a little bit until you want to go in and go kill a deer.
Right.
So having that prior knowledge of where they kind of like to hang out from the ground level, I think, is important before the hunt. And then you can glass and you know where to look. I feel like that's really important.
No, that's awesome. That's, you know, it's a low impact approach doing it in the off season. I find, and I started this off with Eastern whitetail. As soon as the season, and then I applied it to Western hunting, you know, as I evolved as a Western hunter, as soon as the season was over, I would go out there and I would look for, you know, if I was going to be hunting the rut or whatever, but, you know, rubs, scrapes, trails, I would try to put eyes on deer. I would really, because I was always afraid to go in there beforehand or even in the early season, because you don't want to blow them out. But I mean, you got a whole year, you know, a whole year between the next time you get to hunt, whatever. I encourage people, and what I started doing was I started putting in for those, you know, February javelina hunts, you know, and you go out there javelina hunting and you're having a good time javelina hunting, but you're, okay, there's a lot of bucks here. I've seen a lot of does here, a lot of sign here. Obviously, I found a rub. I found this or whatever. And as you start putting pieces of the puzzle together, so then, you know, next January or whatever, December, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to go check out this spot where I was javelina hunting last year and I had seen this and that.
Exactly.
I think that's always been a good way to, you know. Me, I always have a hard time scouting just to scout. So I always like to my scouting to have some, I only get so many days, you know, so many get out of jail free cards with the wife and, you know, so many days I could take off of work. I mean, I do a lot of it, don't get me wrong, but you know, if I was to go back and say, hey, babe, I want to go scouting for, you know, 2-3 days, it's definitely two, three days that's going to come off a hunt. So I'd rather, you know, kind of do my hunting and scouting at the same time, but you know, for different things, I kind of organize it that way. But I like to ask this of a lot of people. What do you think the three most critical factors that contributed to your success over the years?
I think the number one critical factor is I'm extremely self-critical. Like what I was talking about with evaluating, reevaluating myself and everything I do. I'm super honest with myself. If I'm shooting like crap, I'll say I'm shooting like crap. I don't try to like, oh, it's just an off day for me. Or I try to find, I'll dig down and figure out what the reason is for why I'm shooting like crap. Or if I blow a stock, I'll go back through the whole entire stock and figure out where I went wrong. And just knowing that you make mistakes, need to learn from them. Those, the self-critical factor is what I think is super important. The second thing is, kind of along with that, is I always go into hunting with a white belt mentality. Mm-hmm. I know it's always going to be a constant learning process. I'm never going to know everything. There's a lot of guys I've met that claim they know everything about hunting and they talk like it. And they're just getting into hunting. And it's like, you know, I have these legends, mentors that I've grown up on that have killed a buck every year and, you know, 100 plus inch buck with their bow every year. And they're still talking about, oh, I learned this season. Like, it's always my goal to go out. Every time I go out, I want to learn at least one new thing. That's always my goal. And I know I'm never going to know everything. I'm always going to be learning. That's the biggest, one of the biggest factors is just being in that mentality. That you're not an expert when you go out in the field. You're just learning like everybody else. regardless if you're, if you just got into hunting or you got 10 years, you should be on the same wavelength as far as learning things. And just the third thing is along with all that stuff is you just gotta try to put in as much time and effort as you can. Even if you like with, being in school, all my time gets cut, you know, in half and I have to work around it. But I make sure when I do go out, I'm putting in as much effort. You know, everybody has their own limitations. You got to do as much as you can personally. And all those three things I feel like would add, you know, would increase anybody's success if they had them.
Yeah, no, that's good, man. I like to hear you say that because I have that same gripe. You know, I'm obviously somewhere here or here, wherever in my hunting career. And I've experienced X amount of things, and I always feel like every time I hit the field, it's tabula rasa, clean slate, starting off with a new, you know, because each day is something different. It's everything's just got. I mean, and I feel like if I went out there and I felt like I knew everything, and it was just like, oh, okay, you know. The buck's going to do this and you're going to do that and whatever. I don't know if it would be fun anymore. I think it's that,
no.
That chess game that you're constantly playing, you know, yeah. And trying to think ahead and, you know, analyze things. I think that's what for me is the biggest part of hunting. Like, I mean, if I wanted to just kill shit, I'd go to game farm and lay my 300 on top of the hill and just shoot away, you know, but
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's about the hunt. It's about the game, the figuring it out. So cool. Well, man, I was going to ask you to share a teaching moment with us. I know I didn't kind of prep you for it, but if you had some more time left, because I know we're running a little bit late and you got to go to work here, but if you got time, if you could share a story with us that maybe like you learned something about hunting coos deer on that trip that like kind of changed the way you hunt now.
That's a good question.
Go ahead.
I can think of one. I'm sure there's a better story, but the one that comes to my head is when I was younger, I was 16 at the time. My dad and I, we had found this. But it was about a 115 solid 3x, just mass, like you wouldn't believe. And we had glassed him up from 2 miles away and knew he was a good buck. And so we made the run at him, got all the way in, snuck in. And I had ditched my thermals because this was an October hunt. I think I took my bow. And I ditched my thermals and we crawled up. We're laying in the shade of this juniper tree. And because I was hot getting over there. I decided to leave my thermals at my pack and I got cold and I was shaking and the buck was bedded right across the cut at 40 yards. He was broadside, but his hind leg was covering his chest. And I, at the time, thought that I didn't have enough power to blow through just a little bit of leg to get to his chest. And I could have shot him in his bed. And I decided to wait for him to stand up and I ended up waiting 3.5 hours. And that whole time I'm violently shaking because I'm cold. But the buck stands up and I just flat out miss him because I'm cold and I'm, you know, tired. Had I just shot him in his bed, I would have blown through that leg, clean through that leg. Cause you know, I was pulling quite a bit of weight even then. And that PSC setup was good enough to, I would have blown through that leg for sure. So it was a shot I could have took. It wasn't like his whole leg was covering his whole chest. So, you know, it would have been a decent shot. So I learned from that is always be prepared. Grab, if you're stalking and you ditch your pack, grab some stuff because you might be there for a while. And know when you can push that boundary. Know when you need to take, when you need to be assertive and go for the shot. It's a key thing is to know with that balance of when you should wait and when you should go.
Yeah, I always err on the side of pushing. So I would have sent it the second I got there. But no, I've been in that situation several times, and I started actually
carrying, I have this little down vest that's like, I mean, it literally packs down to like a couple of inches. Like it's so compact and it's very light. I started carrying stuff like that just so I know that I can whip it out fast or whatever. I could keep it in my pocket, in my pant pocket or you know, I've had it, you know, even worse situations where I drop my pack and this happens in the evening and I go and make a stalk, whatever, either I get it, either I hit the deer or I don't, whatever. And it's dark. And now you're like, oh shit, I got to go back and find my pack and then make it back to the truck, you know? And you're like, well, oh crap, did I leave my pack here? Did I leave my pack there? You know, it's like, and you have no, so like now like with my bino harness, I make sure I have a knife, fire starting capability, space blanket in there, and a flashlight always, because God forbid, you know, I've had that problem where I've gotten, but luckily, you know, I knew where the truck was so I could get to the truck and then I just came back in the morning and got my pack. But, you know, you spend the night out there, especially in every tour, talking about December, January, you spend the night out there, you're going to freeze your ass off. So, well, that's not a good situation. So, well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and I want to wish you luck on the rest of your season this year. And hopefully we'll see some big bucks hit the ground from you.
All right. Thanks, man. You too.
Yeah.
Where can our listeners be on here?
Thank you. Where can our listeners find out a little bit more about you?
Mainly on Instagram. You can find me at Eric, E-R-I-C, and then underscore Forrest, F-O-R-R-E-S-T. And then I also run the AZ Extreme Instagram page, and that's at AZ Extreme Hunting. And we have a YouTube page, and we just film our hunts just to share with everybody else. And it's nice to put some hunts out there so people enjoy them. Right now I'm working on this hunt, this coos deer hunt that we just got back from, which was my buddy's girlfriend's first ever deer hunt, and she shot a nice drop time coos buck that we'd been watching. Sweet. So yeah, I can't wait to get it out for you guys so you guys can enjoy that.
Awesome. I look forward to seeing it. You guys put out some good stuff, man. I enjoy
Thanks, man.
Watching your videos. Thank you.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.